Brenton and I use like the saying my like healthiest self often when we're having conversation, because I'll be like, babe, like my healthiest self wants to say to you X, Y, Z, but my insecure self is like, blah, like the alarms are going off because of this existing lived experience that, you know, lives inside of me and this pain. And so I just want to fact check with you. Received this direct message on Instagram yesterday, and I thought that you would be the perfect person to unpack it with me because it's all around self-sabotage. And I'll share the direct message with you in a second, but I guess the reason I wanted to bring you into this conversation in particular is because I feel like self-sabotage is such a universal experience across so many areas of our life. And I know that you deal specifically with self-sabotage often in regards to eating disorders, but I wanted to just call you in for this one as well.
Thanks, Kylie. I always love hearing about these listener dilemmas and how we can help. And yes, self-sabotage is definitely a trending topic right now. And there's so many different types. So I'm keen to go through those different types as well.
So the direct message goes like this. I went through a separation about 18 months ago and I am finally in a healthy relationship and I'm trying not to self-sabotage it by thinking into things that he says too much or trying to find a negative way to take it, even though I know he only has the purest of intentions in showing me love. I keep thinking it's too good to be true, so I must be missing something or being blind.
Just quickly, a word from today's sponsors. Unless, of course, you're one of our Venti members, in that case, there are no ads and your episode is about to keep playing.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
That's the gist of the self-sabotage that I thought we could begin with unpacking, I guess, because like I said, self-sabotage is one of those things that we all experience in different ways. And I feel like it's very subjective, you know, like what one person's version of self-sabotage is entirely different to someone else's. And I do like relate and understand this in particular, like this way of thinking, like, oh my gosh, is this too good to be true? What am I missing? And do I need to like aggravate this situation so that it feels more comfortable?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I think we can all relate to this type of thinking, especially in relationships. And maybe let's just begin with defining what is self-sabotage for anyone who is a bit unsure, because we often think self-sabotage is a behavior, but it can actually be a behavior or a type of thought pattern that undermines our own goals, own dreams, or even our well-being. So essentially, it's like shooting ourselves in the foot when we're just about to make progress.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you cleared that up, because I even do that. I tend to think like, oh, self-sabotage is a behavior or an action, but you're right. It's the pattern of thought, which we know.
Yeah.
Like, most of us understand that actions come from a thought, but when you really break it down, you're like, oh, hang on. Am I in like that loop of thoughts that are holding me back?
Yes, and what we know in psychology, according to cognitive behavioral theory, is that your cognitions, your thoughts, control how you feel, and those feelings lead to behavior. So, for example, this particular woman is thinking it's too good to be true. And if she's thinking that, that might lead her to behavior such as going through this person's phone or, you know, accusing him of lying. And then that behavior can potentially affect the relationship. So they're both linked. So it's important to identify, are my thoughts self-sabotaging? Are my behavior self-sabotaging? And it can be either or.
And then it almost becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like it's like you have that thought, it's too good to be true. So you start going to look for all of the ways that you're going to prove to yourself that it is too good to be true. And then you begin to find the indicators that are telling you that's right. And then the other things that perhaps exist as well fade away and they become quieter and non-existent. And then, you know, you hyperfixate and you make that other behavior larger and bigger. But I also think it's tricky, Steph, because I think that it can be really hard to know, you know, like it can be hard to know, am I self-sabotaging this and am I focusing on the things that are bad, or am I being realistic and aware and like seeking facts? Like, does that make sense?
Yes. And I think the same. Like, for example, if someone is on a health journey, right, and they're trying not to eat, I don't know, refined sugars or whatever it is, and they eat it or they binge eat on it, I'm thinking, is their eating restrictive and that's why they're binge eating, or are they self-sabotaging their health efforts? And I think it really comes down to how often is it happening, what's the context it's happening, and remember, it's a pattern. So if it's a once off and you binge on chocolate once off, I wouldn't say that's self-sabotaging. But if this particular lady in relationship after relationship is thinking, are they too good for me? It's too good to be true. I'd say the pattern is the distinguishing factor between self-sabotage versus being aware and the action you take from that. Because you can be aware without necessarily acting on that kind of awareness in a way that affects your relationship.
Where does self-sabotaging come from? Like, does it come from a self-esteem or a self-worth issue? Like, as in you just don't believe that you're worthy of something, so then you begin to feel like you have to prove that that's true in a way to kind of make your brain feel like it's safe and it's right?
Really good question. Now, why do we self-sabotage? To avoid pain or discomfort. At the end of the day, human beings are designed to avoid pain and we want to act towards pleasure. That's what drives our behavior. The only time we can override pain or discomfort is when there's a greater drive to override it. So, for example, if you're trying to work on your health and you think, you know what, I'll be able to have more energy to play with my kids. If you don't kind of have that overarching drive or that reason, it's really hard to stick to your goals and dreams and you're like, I don't need to do that. I can just have, you know, continue smoking or continue drinking. I don't have kids. So it really does depend on whether you've got a factor in your life that can override your initial desire for pleasure, because we don't want to feel pain. We don't want to feel discomfort. So what we do in the moment is we engage in behaviors that pull us away from our goal because in the moment it feels good. Now, to answer your question, in relationships, I think it really comes down to how have I been shaped from my upbringing, my childhood, my previous relationships. So for this particular woman, she said in her message, I'm finally in a healthy relationship. So what that tells me is her previous relationships probably weren't healthy, which has led her to maybe believe she doesn't deserve a healthy relationship, it's not worth it, or she's not worthy of a healthy relationship. Perhaps she grew up with, we don't know, but witnessing her parents arguing, or she never got the role models for a healthy relationship. So the reason we self-sabotage, it can come to a few different needs, which we'll talk about, but essentially it really does come down to your internal working model. And what that means is your upbringing, what did you witness, what is your standard in relationships. What was your upbringing like? What was your attachment like? Because attachment theory is really linked to self-sabotage as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting because as you were talking about how like sometimes we self-sabotage because we want to avoid pain, I was thinking like, yes, and it's almost like we want to avoid a certain type of pain that maybe feels uncontrollable or imminent, like it's going to happen. So I just want to get the pain over with now. Because really, if you're self-sabotaging in a relationship, that doesn't feel good either. That is certainly painful. Maybe you're engaging in behavior where you are bringing conflict in when it doesn't need to be. Maybe you're, you know, like you're starting fights, you're acting in all sorts of ways, and that's painful. But maybe somewhere in your subconscious, it's like that pain is better because you're in control of it rather than being vulnerable and being open and thinking, well, maybe a worse pain that I won't be in control of is coming for me down the track. And I guess that's something I can relate to in regards to going through a divorce, going through a breakup. And then it's like you get into a relationship and it's very scary because you know how painful it can be to lose that.
Yes, exactly. And you're right. There is a need for control. People think that giving themselves control will make them feel better. So for example, relationship self-sabotage might be checking your ex's social media because you think, oh, if I'm looking at it, yes, I was right. He is talking to other girls or he's messaging other people. You think you have that sense of control by saying, you know what, I was right. Similar in relationships when you self-sabotage or you do things that pushes that person away. So you can say, I knew it. I was right. So like you said, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And it feels satisfying because at least then, even though it's not the outcome you want, it's the outcome you can predict. And as humans, we do feel safe when we can predict an outcome. So I think that's really important to highlight that element of control, because I think a lot of self-sabotage in relationship comes down to that. It's like you want to control the conflict rather than have it control you at a later date.
Yes, you want to kill it before it dies. So at least you can say, well, see, I knew it. And at the end of the day, self-sabotage is a distraction from the discomfort you feel out of stepping out of your comfort zone. So if you are listening to this and you're a self-sabotager and you think, well, okay, why am I doing this? What's going on for me? I want you to stop and think, what am I trying to distract myself from? What am I feeling every time I want to self-sabotage? Am I feeling anxiety? Am I feeling uncertainty? Am I scared of achieving? Am I scared, or do I not believe I deserve to win or achieve the goal? So just building your awareness around what is this discomfort I'm trying to avoid, and what am I actually feeling in this moment? Am I scared? Is it fear?
And you know what else I think would factor into this kind of self-sabotage, this relationship style? I imagine, she says with a smile, because I can relate. Like I know this feeling in my bones where it's like you don't trust your judgment anymore because of things that you've been through. And that makes it very hard then to relax into being open and vulnerable when you have been through certain things that make you go, well, hang on. I didn't know all of that stuff. I don't trust myself anymore. And so I think when you feel that way, when you're like, I don't trust myself to make these judgments, you do become more critical of every single little thing. And you're looking for all of the indicators that you feel like you should have noticed last time. So then you become like, you know, this detective in your relationship where you're looking under everything and you're picking apart things that probably don't need to be picked apart. And I think that's what this lady is saying. You know, she's overthinking, overanalyzing when she does recognize that he has the best intentions for her, but she just can't stop like picking the scab.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, we have so many unconscious beliefs and patterns that we're unaware of. So for example, if you have been in relationships that have been horrible in the past or controlling, you probably have beliefs that I don't know what I'm really thinking. Can I really trust myself? How do I know what's best for me? And these beliefs lead us to feelings of being unworthy or fear of rejection or fear of abandonment, whatever it might be. And the thing is, our beliefs provide our brain with the parameters through which it sees the world. So if you're looking out to the world through these, let's say, glasses, these lenses or these parameters of people can't be trusted, I don't know what to think, your brain is going to just filter out all the information against that belief and just filter in on information that validates that belief. So essentially what you see and what your brain is going to pick up on comes from your beliefs and what you think about.
Yeah, the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon, like the confirmation bias. If you think you're going to get hurt, you're going to always see the ways in which you can get hurt. Whereas if you have that belief, and these beliefs could come from childhood, you have that belief that, you know, everyone's going to treat you with respect and come from a really pure and authentic place, then it is more believable. That's what you see.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yes, absolutely. So at the end of the day, you can try to change your self-sabotaging behavior, but unless you change your identity and change who you are, essentially your, not your personality and who you are, but for example, okay, say you were giving up smoking, but you kept self-sabotaging every time you went out, you had a smoke here and there, etc. It's not about, that's it, I'm not going to go out anymore, I'm not going to buy cigarettes. Yes, you can change the behavior, but you need to step into your life and say, I am a non-smoker. Not, oh, I'm trying to give up smoking and it's so hard and it's terrible, because you're emphasizing the pain. And when you emphasize the pain of something, then you're going to want to avoid it. Whereas if we can emphasize the pleasure, oh my gosh, I have so much more energy, I'm increasing my life, my quality of life, then that identity is more likely to reduce the self-sabotaging, because you don't think you're doing this horrible thing that you need to escape from.
So in this situation, what would be your advice for this particular listener? Would it be like, okay, because obviously we're not talking about smoking, would it be more like, you are going to look at this relationship with fresh eyes? Like what would be your literal advice there? Because I think it's so hard when trauma is existing and we've got these lived experiences that are informing our thought patterns. And so I think it's really hard to go, oh, okay, well, in this relationship, I'm going to just wipe the slate completely clean, because we all come with these lived experiences and it's hard to put that baggage down.
100%. So I would first of all identify where this is coming from. Okay. Where is this coming from? What has been your experience with relationships? So if I was speaking to this lady, I would be curious to know, okay, what were your relationships like before this? What was your attachment like with your parents, right? So attachment theory suggests that our early experiences with our caregivers shape our attachment styles, which is basically how we relate to others and ourselves. And if you have an anxious attachment or avoidant attachment, that can have issues in relationships. Before this lady, I'd say, okay, where did this come from? What is her internal working model of relationships? What is her standards when it comes to relationships? What is her opinions on what a relationship should be like? Because our standards and our expectations come from our childhood experiences and learnt behavior. So if you can identify where it's coming from, every time it crops up and it's like, oh, maybe go through their phone, or, oh, you know, he's only just being nice to you because he did something bad, say, aha. There's that part of my brain, that learned behavior from my last relationship, because that's what my ex used to do. Identify it, call it out. And then I'd say to her, once you've done that, what are you feeling right now? What are you avoiding right now? And maybe she's avoiding the potential explanation that he's buying me flowers because he loves me and cares about me. And I'm avoiding that because I don't believe that can be true, because I don't deserve love.
Yeah, I even think sitting down and putting literal pen to paper around everything that you've just said would be so helpful for anyone in this situation. Sitting down and writing, okay, this is the behavior. Let's call him Johnny. Johnny, the current partner, is doing X, Y, Z. Is that behavior on its own problematic, or am I being activated and triggered because of past stuff? And then you could almost even do like a mind map type thing. Like, is this behavior a problem? Yes, no, maybe, like one of those little cubes that you used to make in primary school. But you could literally map it out and be like, well, no, that's not a problematic behavior. Or you could go, well, yes, maybe it is. What would be the next step that I would take if I was using like my healthy, wise mind? And Brenton and I use like the saying, my like healthiest self, often when we're having conversation, because I'll be like, babe, like my healthiest self wants to say to you X, Y, Z, but my insecure self is like, blah, like the alarms are going off because of this existing lived experience that, you know, lives inside of me and this pain. And so I just want to fact check with you, you know, I want to talk to you about it. And I think like if you're in a relationship with someone and she's saying this is a healthy relationship, then a healthy relationship would be that your partner can be grateful that you're coming to them and going like, my unhealthiest self wants to say this, but my healthiest self wants to say this. And I want to fact check some things with you and talk it through with you.
That's so important, because what you're actually doing without realizing it is you're kind of doing a hybrid of cognitive behavioral therapy, which is challenging your thoughts by looking at the evidence. So your thoughts might be, he's doing something shady, he doesn't really love me, he's using me. And then what you want to do is write down those thoughts and say, okay, where is the evidence for this thought that say he's using me? And there's no opinions, there's no guesses, it has to be a verifiable fact. We call this putting thoughts on trial. Imagine you're in a courtroom, you're putting them on trial, and then we say, where's the evidence against this belief? Okay, well, he hasn't used me in the past. He usually does this. I mean, so you look at the evidence against the thought, evidence for the thought, and then you come to a, like a judge comes to a verdict, the judge takes all the evidence and comes to a more balanced thought. So you can say, you know what, whilst sometimes I might think that my partner's using me, this is an old belief that has come up from old relationships and the evidence doesn't suggest that he's using me, and I'm actually really happy. So we're still validating the old self. We're still validating the insecure, maladaptive part of our brain, but we're moving more towards an effective way of thinking.
Yeah, I think that's so helpful. And I also know there are situations where people will just put those like rose-colored glasses on and be unwilling to see behavior and see it as anything other than perfect. So I think, you know, putting your thoughts on trial is actually effective both ways, like so that you don't end up missing things, or you don't end up being over generous because you could begin to actually see a pattern.
Yes. And the second part of that, which you're actually doing, is you're kind of doing what's called parts therapy or parts work. And this can come either from integrated family systems or schema therapy. And what these therapies suggest is we have different parts. So parts of our personality develop based on our experiences. So for example, you might have this insecure 18-year-old part, and every now and then she pops up when you're not feeling the best about yourself, or you've got this defensive part that like comes in. It's like rah, 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 when it's feeling wronged or, you know, senses injustice. So identifying those parts is critical. So I would say to this lady, okay, it sounds like there's a part of you that's fearful or worried or anxious that this person, you know, is too good to be true, and that's okay. But then there's this part of you that identifies this is the only healthy relationship I've been with. So what we want to do is acknowledge these parts. There's no bad parts. Acknowledge their needs and wants. Okay, what does this part need? Maybe it needs a little bit more reassurance in those moments where I'm doubting it. And then you work together and you integrate the self.
Yes, and if it is a relatively new relationship as well, it's probably helpful to just have someone outside of the relationship that has a bit of an impartial view and has some knowledge on the topics, because I think it can be tricky when you go to your girlfriends with certain things, who then they've got their own stuff, they've got their own parts that might be activated, and you say like, oh, this isolated incident's, and they may even be super protective of you, or it's just hit a nerve for them. And then that snowball can start rolling down a hill, and it can be really, really hard to stop once it gets momentum. So having a conversation and ongoing, like regular conversations, obviously, with your partner, but also having someone that you can go and debrief with that you trust is going to help you to follow your own knowledge and your own intuition, that's not going to make situations bigger or twist them.
Yeah, exactly. Because you never really know. Other people might not give you the best advice, or they might be wounded themselves, and they may also think that he's too good to be true. So if they have the same beliefs as you, it may not be particularly helpful. Whereas if you have a friend who, you know, is an optimist and says, no, that like, you deserve this, you know, enjoy it. So I think it's important to just be mindful of who you are getting advice from. Are they in a happy relationship that you would admire? And yeah, just go from there, because not everyone's advice would be helpful.
And what are some ways that you would suggest people can work on their own self-esteem or self-value as well? Because I imagine that's an important pillar.
Yes, absolutely. And the research has shown that people who do have more self-sabotaging behavior are more likely to have lower self-esteem, because they don't believe they deserve the goal, or they don't believe that they deserve true love based on what's happened to them. So it really comes down to doing the work on yourself, changing those beliefs, starting to act as though you believe those beliefs. Because a lot of people say, oh, but Steph, I don't believe it. I can't just say I'm good enough. I don't believe it. Say, okay, well, if I did believe I was good enough, what would I be doing? How would I be acting? How would I walk into the room? How would I carry myself? What job promotion would I apply for? So you don't have to feel it to believe it, but start to act it. Because when you act it, then things are going to happen to show more evidence for that belief, and then you're going to start to believe it.
Yeah, I've said this so many times. Like, people that have listened to my podcast for years will be like, we know exactly what you're going to say. But so often people do get it twisted, and they think, oh, I've got to think my way into acting. But it's act your way into thinking so often. And I can like remember so clearly years and years ago when Snapchat was big, I sat down, I was having this big Snapchat conversation about this, but in another lane, because I was answering someone who was talking about how they were so insecure about wearing swimmers to the beach, and they were missing out on, you know, swimming with their kids and playing in the sand with their kids because they felt like they couldn't be seen in a swimsuit. And I was like saying, like, I validate that. I completely understand what you are saying. You know, there are so many layers there that we could get into and unpack. And I also know that if you start acting the way that you think you would act, if you have a perfect body, you will be surprised at how your relationship and your connection to your body changes, because you could go and spend a fortune on crafting this perfect body. You could spend so many years on crafting this perfect body and still have the exact same thoughts. So try now acting in a way that you think your healthiest self would act, and just see what happens. And so often when we do that, we realize, oh, like, it wasn't the thing I thought it was. You know, it wasn't what I thought it was. And I do have the ability to act in a way that my quote unquote healthiest self, healthiest mind self would act.
Yes, absolutely. And what that does is it gives your brain a chance to disprove your beliefs wrong. So, for example, if you have social anxiety or you have beach anxiety and you think everyone's going to stare at me, no one's going to talk to me, I'm going to have a terrible time, unless you actually do the thing, you don't have that opportunity for your brain to say, oh, well, I didn't die. It wasn't that bad. I got through it. And that teaches your brain that it's safe to do these things.
Yes. And if we think about our brain and kind of creating new neural pathways of thought, we've got these old, you know, this is how I kind of think of it. You know, you've got these old deep trenches of the same belief going back and forth, back and forth. And say you've been in a long-term relationship and you've developed all of these beliefs about romantic partnerships. When you then start to create a new path, it takes time and it takes repetition and different actions and different ways of thinking to create that deeper pathway. So in this situation, it might be like, okay, my self-sabotaging self wants to just go down that deep trench because it's familiar, not comfortable, but it is familiar. And what would my healthiest self do? What would my wise mind tell me to do? And know that it may feel a bit uncomfortable because it's not as familiar, it's not as well worn, it's a new path you're creating in your brain, and just expect that it may be a little bit difficult to begin with. It's difficult to be vulnerable, it's difficult to believe that you deserve good things, it's difficult to trust people sometimes, but it is possible.
Yes. And another frame for what would my healthiest self do or say or think is, what would my compassionate self do? Because compassion is a really, really big part of this. Self-compassion, it, like you said, it's going to take time. You've been programmed to think this way for so long, and that deprogramming takes repeated efforts and consistency. So it's about being kind to yourself along the way. So, for example, if you react and lose it at your partner for no reason, you want to acknowledge, okay, I stuffed up, but it's okay. I'm learning. And the key is to repair quickly. I'm a big believer in everyone has little tiffs, but how quick you repair it and the work you do to repair it is more important than the fight itself.
Yes, I'm so glad you mentioned compassion and back to those integrative parts. Almost thinking of yourself like that and going, oh, well, thank you to this little part of me that wants to keep me safe. Like, thank you. I see you. Thank you for honoring me. I know that you're coming from a place of lived experience and fear, and it's okay. I'm now going to let you go back. You can step aside and I'm going to access another part of myself. Like, even just that kind of mind activity is helpful.
Yes. Yes, and there's an activity we can do right now. The listeners want to try it, similar to that one. So it's just about closing your eyes, taking a deep breath, and I just want you to notice what comes up for you. So if there was a part of you that was trying to tell you something right now about how you're feeling, just notice what it's trying to say. And without judgment, I want you to thank that part and say, thank you for letting me know this about myself. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes, come back to the room, and you can try this more with other times of the day just to see what parts of yourself exist. Because like I said, these are unconscious and they usually don't come to the surface unless they're activated. So just checking in with your different parts and what they're trying to tell you is really important.
Yeah. There's a journal prompt that I will use as well sometimes where I will sit down, pen and paper, and I'll say, what would wisdom say to me? You know, like what would my wisest mind tell me in this situation? And it's a similar thing, isn't it? It's kind of just allowing yourself to go, whew, what part do I want to call forward?
Yes, I love that. But you do have to be in a calm state. So if you're feeling activated or super anxious or super overwhelmed, calm yourself first before you use these types of cognitive strategies, because it does require you to be in your frontal lobe.
Yeah, you might not be mid-conflict or mid-meltdown and go, oh, I know what to do. Steph said, close my eyes. Like, you probably aren't going to do that. So maybe engaging in a different behavior that can self-soothe that angry part of you and then come back to it.
Yes, absolutely. And it takes time. It takes practice. So just really practice self-compassion, practice reframing those thoughts. And if you're feeling ambitious, like this particular woman in the example, say, what if the opposite of these thoughts are true? What if he is just a really great match for me? What if I am deserving of this? Think the best case scenario.
I can imagine you cover a lot of self-sabotage work in your online course. I know that in your book you touch on these themes as well. For our listeners who are hungry for more from you, and perhaps their ears kind of peaked, you know, pricked up when we said self-sabotage in regards to food as well, where can our listeners connect with you?
Thanks, Kylie. You can come find me at MindFoodSteph on Instagram and TikTok. And if you want more depth on these topics, I do have a podcast called the What's Eating You podcast with psychologist Stephanie Giorgio.
Perfect. I'll make sure we have all of those details in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast episode. If you want more of the I Am podcast in your ears, make sure you become a podcast subscriber. It is really, really simple to do. All of the details are in the show notes. For the cost, actually less than the cost of a cup of coffee per month, you will receive access to exclusive podcast episodes. That's right, you'll get a bonus episode every single week that you will not hear anywhere else. And to be honest with you, I really am sharing a lot more over in those exclusive episodes. It feels like a really safe zone for me. So make sure you check out the subscription offers that we do have available for that exclusive content. And perhaps best of all of the episodes will be ad-free. So if you feel good about supporting a female-founded, female-led business, check out the subscription offerings available and become a podcast supporter today. Today's podcast episode was recorded on the land of the Bundjalung Nation. In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respect to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.